This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor. 17 people, teenagers and adults, are dead after a mass shooting in Parkland, a South Florida suburb northwest of Miami. Police say classes were just about to let out at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School yesterday afternoon. That was when a 19-year-old former student walked up to the campus and opened fire. He's in custody now. Melissa Falkowski teaches at Stoneman Douglas High. She hid her students in a closet during the shooting.
I don't think we could have been more prepared than we were today. I mean, we talked to every single class period that sat in front of us, you know, about what to do in this situation, in a bomb threat, in a fire drill. Like, we went over every safety, and every single teacher did that with every single, you know, class that they had until the kids were tired of hearing about it. But they knew what to do, and we knew what to do. And even still, even with that, we still have 17 people that aren't going to return to their families. And to me, that's totally unacceptable.
That was Melissa Falkowski, a teacher at Stoneman Douglas High School, speaking to MSNBC outside the school. Now, let's speak to Brendan Byrne, a reporter at WMFE Public Radio in Orlando. He used to attend Stoneman. Brendan, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Let's also hear from Caitlin Switalski, a reporter at WLRN Public Radio in Miami. She was at the scene of the shooting yesterday and joins us now from a grief counseling center nearby. Caitlin, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Brendan, let me start with you. I understand that your mother-in-law teaches at Stoneman now. How is she doing? Was she on campus yesterday? Is she okay?
She was on campus, and she was able to make it out. Obviously, pretty shaken up about what happened, but yeah, she was able to make it out, and just, you know, deeply saddened that her colleagues were there, and she's worried about her students and who might have been hurt or killed. It's very tough to be dealing with that right now.
Brendan, describe the area where Stoneman is. Talk to us about Parkland, Florida. What kind of community is it? What's it like demographically? Where in South Florida is it?
Yeah, so it's in North Broward. I grew up there. I was born and raised just in a city just south of Parkland called Coral Springs and attended there. You know, it's a very affluent city. It's very low crime in Parkland. When you see... You don't think of it as an area that you would have to worry or anything like that. It's very shocking to think that something like this would happen in a city like that.
It's also worth noting that a lot of people in that part of South Florida in Broward County have a lot of connections to other counties, to Miami-Dade, to the south, to Palm Beach County, to the north. You know, people moved north from Hurricane Andrew and ended up in Broward. So I imagine that you, as a former Broward County resident, have been hearing from that whole network, from people across South Florida who are feeling this.
Oh, absolutely. And across the state. I mean, you know, even up here in Orlando, quite a few people that I grew up with in South Florida are up here. We tend to stick around in Florida as Floridians. but we're all very, very much affected by this.
Caitlin Switalski, talk about what's happening in Parkland now. You're at a grief counseling center near campus. What's happening there?
A lot of students are starting to trickle in their friend groups and with their parents. The American Red Cross has a disaster bus out here, actually, and they're bringing resources inside to help people. There's lots of service dogs, and counselors from all over Broward County, actually, are here from different schools to help kids sort of talk about this and get through it. And I was talking with a lot of parents, actually, and I had a mom tell me, you know, she goes, "It's an odd day when your 17-year-old son says, 'Hey, I'm waking up at 6 a.m. I want to go to grief counseling right now.'"
Caitlin, walk us through the narrative of what happened. The Broward Sheriff's Office polices Parkland. It was on the scene fairly quickly. As I understand, there's a substation less than a mile and a half away from campus. It's kind of a straight shot from the substation to the school. Walk us through the narrative of what happened yesterday.
So I had a lot of students tell me they'd had a scheduled fire drill yesterday morning. And that went without a hitch. But after almost at the end of their fourth class of the day, a fire alarm went off again. And teachers were pretty puzzled as to why this was happening, but they just jumped into action. All the students told me they were acting as if it was a very normal fire drill until suddenly it was not. And teachers just kept saying from behind, you know, don't stop walking. Marjory Stoneman Douglas High is a very open campus. And so when teachers told these groups of kids, you know, don't stop until you get past the Walmart down the street, like, just keep going. And there became a point where some students were told to go back inside because it was a code red. And a bunch of the students I talked with, you know, they saw other kids with gunshot wounds. They got the sense that this was such an emergency situation, but they had done this drill. And so a lot of them were able to get away and, you know, as for the kids inside, teachers jumped into action. Kids were in closets. I talked to one father, and he said if it weren't for text messages, he would not have known his daughter was safe for hours. She was lying on a floor in a classroom with a backpack over her for protection.
It sounds like what you're saying is that there were two emergency protocols that the students knew to enact. One had to do with just this supposed fire drill, and then when they knew it was a code red, another protocol took over. They knew to shelter in place?
Yes, and teachers came out, and some students had to go back inside the buildings. The shooting took place in the freshman building, and on such a large high school campus, students were able to get back into the other buildings for sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And then, of course, the FBI SWAT team came in, and one by one, they cleared individual classrooms.
We are talking to Caitlin Switalski of WLRN Public Radio in Miami, Brendan Byrne of WMFE Public Radio in Orlando, and with you about yesterday's school shooting in Parkland, Florida, in northwest Broward County that has left 17 people dead. We're awaiting another briefing from Broward Sheriff Scott Israel that should be happening momentarily, and we'll bring you the latest with that. You'll also find more on that on your NPR member station and at NPR.org. And we're glad to hear that some of you who are directly connected to the school have been sharing your thoughts with us. Dara commented on our Facebook page, "My father was teaching at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, where I attended high school for 2 years, when the shooting happened. He was at the school on lockdown with 20 students and some teachers. He's fine, but this is so surprising. No one thought this would happen. Why were there no metal detectors? It's just a tragedy." Brendan, what about that? It seems like, as you said, this is not, and I hate to refer to it this way because it's so stereotypical, but it's true that this is not the kind of community where people expected this sort of thing to happen. Parkland just won some award, as I understand, for being the safest community in Florida.
Right. That's not what you would expect at a place like that. But, I mean, as we learned from Caitlin and talking with some of the people that were there, I mean, they followed all the safety procedures to a T. You know, those doors lock. It is a really large open-air campus. You know, just thinking back to my high school days, it took me more than 5 minutes to get from class to class. I mean, that's how big it is. So, I mean, with all those safety procedures in place, to still have, you know, 17 people dead from this, I mean, that's got to show you something about the motive of the shooter and what he went in there intending to do.
Pretty strong thoughts from several of you about what to do now. Kennedy tweeted, "When will thoughts and prayers turn into legislation?" Gaytheist wrote on our website, the1a.org, "I wish we could do more than give platitudes and create some lasting legislation to help prevent this from happening." Raisin Detter writes, "How can those in Congress with children continue to not do anything? I don't even have kids, and it breaks my heart. Call for swipe card access to schools, sensible gun legislation, just do something. Watch the videos, look at the pictures, and tell me this shouldn't be our most pressing concern. Children are being murdered in their schools." Caitlin, can you talk a little bit about some of the policy debate behind this? As I understand it, Florida Senator Marco Rubio has spoken out about this. Pam Bondi, Florida's Attorney General, was on the scene yesterday. And the gun rights, gun control debate in Florida has not really calmed down. It's active right now.
It's very active. And, you know, we have our other Congresswoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is, you know, very against guns, and that she's part of this debate as well. It's interesting to know that Parkland is a community with its affluence. I was talking to some parents, and they told me, you know, we learned at a block party, we're the only people on our block that don't own a gun. And so this debate hits this community particularly hard because it's a question of, you know, does more guns start to equal better self-defense, or is it just too many guns? And it creates that danger. So it's also interesting to know that the shooter, the alleged shooter, got his weapon legally. You know, he's had troubling social media posts and left a trail that did, you know, alarm people.
Brendan, I wonder from your perspective before out of time, what the conversation sounds like in Parkland going forward. As someone who grew up there, went to school there, if you were still there, what do you think your friends and neighbors would be talking about other than just trying to comfort one another in terms of what to do now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and I kind of have a unique perspective being here in Orlando and you know, living through the Pulse shooting is, I mean, this is really going to be a time for community. What comes next is the investigation, which is frustratingly slow at some points. And, you know, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But the community is there, and the community in Orlando came together here in the wake of Pulse, and I am very optimistic that the community down there in South Florida will do exactly the same.
That's Brendan Byrne of WMFE Public Radio in Orlando. Brendan, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
And Caitlin Swatulski of WLRN Public Radio in Miami. Thanks, Caitlin.
Thanks.
Coming up, America's intelligence agencies all agree that Russia meddled in the last presidential election. So what's next with this year? And are we ready? I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you from Ann Arbor, Michigan. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.